People look around and they see a wasteful world. They see endless, mindless consumption. And increasingly, we see people fearing the future rather than hoping for it. I'm going to make the case today that in order to realign this, money must be the most valuable good in society. And necessarily, it must be the hardest thing to produce, and that we actually can know this because of where the value of money comes from and what the money is in relation to the society that uses it. I want you to come away from the end of this episode realizing that not only is it aligned to have a sound money that grows in value, but it is necessary for us to value the future of our society in the first place. So we're going to take this show to go back to our Fiat World series with Fiat Waste. It's time for a Guy's Take episode. The best in Bitcoin made audible. I am Guy Swan, and this is Bitcoin Audible. What is up, guys? Welcome back to Bitcoin Audible. I am Guy Swan, your host, the guy who has read more about Bitcoin than anybody else you know. And we have got a Guy's Take episode today. The show is brought to you by Swan Bitcoin, the best and easiest place to quickly buy Bitcoin, to buy it on an ongoing basis. Every week, every month, every day, if you want, do an automatic stack, an automatic withdrawal to your keys, plus an entire financial suite of services for retirement, for business, for a vault and multi-sig setup. You name it, check them out. And also for the next $10,000 you buy, there are no fees at all. So it is completely free. You buy a dollar's worth of Bitcoin, you get a dollar's worth of Bitcoin. And then also CoinKite, the makers of the Cold Card hardware wallet. And you know you have to keep your Bitcoin safe. You know you have to hold your own keys. Do not wait for that step. Go ahead and do that. You will not regret it. Get yourself a Cold Card. Get a discount with my code BitcoinAudible and keep your keys safe. All right, so we are continuing the Fiat series of this show with this episode will be titled Fiat Waste. And what I mean by that is not so simple as fiat encourages waste. It's far more fundamental and far deeper into the understanding of what money does to the network that is established around it. And most importantly, what the money is in regards to that network. So we're going to cover a couple of basics again that I've kind of covered in the two sats shows or the little two sats videos that we've done, just to make sure we lay the groundwork and fully understand what I mean by this argument, because it's a little bit difficult to wrap your head around, but I think when you see the picture that I'm trying to paint, I think you'll understand just how unbelievably deep or how fundamentally core to the nature of a network that is built around the money, that the society that the money creates. And that's another major element that we have to understand, is that society only exists because of money. It is the only reason society can scale to millions, even billions of people, is because of a common monetary language, a common economic tool for trade. Otherwise, there is no trade network. You cannot scale a trade network past damn near anything. You can't scale it past a couple of hundred people with barter. It never works, so much so that literally that has never even existed. It's funny how often we use the analogy or talk about, like, you know, used to, long time ago, we would use barter, where somebody would trade, you know, 5 chickens or 20 chickens for a cow. And the reality, even though that's intuitively, it seems obvious that that's how it would have worked, it's actually so unbelievably inefficient that it's never meaningfully existed at all. The idea of trading directly the goods that like you have to have the chickens right at the time that the other person has the cow, or you need exactly the shoes and exactly the size as the other person in order to buy chickens or drink some water. The simple fact of the matter is that that has literally never existed at scale, even at a small scale. It has largely only ever existed in entirely one-off individual circumstances. It could never be rightfully discussed as a quote-unquote system, as something that has established a broader network of any sort that was meaningful in an economic sense at all. Like, that is how inefficient it is. It's genuinely never truly existed. It is purely theory. So when we use that example as, you know, it used to be this before money, that's actually not true. It was credit at the very beginning. It was debt, because barter was so unbelievably inefficient that all you could do was trade within your social group, within your Dunbar's number of 100, 150, 200 people, your family essentially, so that you just knew who the asshole was who wasn't going to pay anybody back, and you just didn't trade with them. But everybody else just kind of kept a mental tally of, okay, well, you know, I let you eat part of my deer that I hunted today, so, you know, the next time I need you to repair my house or teepee or whatever, you know, you're going to pay me that back. The problem with that is, even though debt scales massively better than barter, because barter is just nonsense, debt comes with massive trade-offs and scales extremely poorly past a very cohesive, very culturally tightened, and very clearly defined network boundaries of a group of people. The only case, this is why debt has only ever worked at quote-unquote at scale with governments, but then it literally has an extremely short time span or extremely short lifespan. It's like, you know, a bug in the context of money. You know, bug's lifespan, you know, mosquito lives and dies within a day or something like that. If we wanted to look at historical monies, you know, gold is like an ancient tortoise that's 200 years old, or an oak that's 2,000 years, you know, some crazy tree that's just massive and just has been around forever and ever and ever and has just spanned through generations and generations and generations. And fiat is literally like just a bunch of bugs. It's, you know, sometimes you get lucky and they last a week or 2 weeks. And so they can actually scale big, mostly through violence, by basically forcing people to use their credit, but they also collapse very big as well, and they collapse generally very quickly because of the incredible conflict of interest and the incredible abuse of a credit system where someone is simply creditworthy because of the political power they have. And then that political power turns into monetary power when your money itself is essentially a debt. So, in that context, sound money, sound independent money, where no one controls it and it is scarce by its nature and easily verified, is actually the only thing we know of that can essentially scale infinitely, can scale cross-culturally, can scale across languages, can scale across demographics and values, and can create a cohesive and sustainable economic society among the participants of its network. Money is the ultimate token of I scratch your back, you scratch mine. It is a tool, as I think it's Richard Dawkins says in, is it Sapiens? I think it's Sapiens. I could be wrong on the book. I'll have to look it up. I believe I saved it somewhere after reading the book. And I've also heard it since, but money is the ultimate tool of quote unquote reciprocal altruism. How do we make it so that we have an interchangeable unit of helping someone else out to some degree in comparison to someone else? Like how can I essentially take your favor and redeem it from a completely different person who does not know you, who does not speak your language, who does not share your values, who has no idea what you did to earn the favor or to give me the favor, and made a completely different set of skills, completely different type of favor to be redeemed. That is what money does. It allows us literally to work together as a society rather than to always be at each other's throats. And it is comical that the people who hate society, which, funny enough, our money, the way our money works, has actually created a dog-eat-dog society. And it is the fact that it is bad money that does this. And I think by the time we get to the end of this episode, I hope that you will understand exactly why. Because it necessitates that course of that consequence. If you create a bad money, it will literally create a competition to use up resources as fast as you can. And when we are all net using up resources, it becomes a dog-eat-dog competition. It's funny, it genuinely could not be simpler. The worse a money is, the less scarce it is, the more society falls apart. The less society is cooperative and sustainable, or just explicitly unsustainable. And the harder, the scarcer, and the more independent a money is, the more sustainable, the more prosperous, and the more long-term aligned a society is. And again, in this episode, I want to paint a picture as to why I think this is both very intuitive and necessarily the case because of what money represents. Now, this will be in the next, this is the two sats video that I am working on right now and I don't have completed yet. But it's important to understand this concept to as a foundation for the argument that I'm making, is that money is not real wealth. Go back to the idea of a monetary premium. What do we say when we say a monetary premium? It means that this is a value that the monetary good has above and beyond, way above and beyond what it's actually directly useful for. Well, this is odd. Why would something have value past what you can do with it, some individual function of it? Where does that value come from? Why does it maintain an additional, a huge additional value? And where is it from? It doesn't just poof out of thin air. You can't just have like imaginary value. What is it that gives monetary goods that premium? A premium to the point that it's literally more valuable than anything else. Well, in order to understand why that monetary premium exists, and more importantly, what that monetary premium is, we have to realize that money isn't real wealth. Money is a proxy. Money is access to wealth. Understanding that money is not genuine wealth, it's not direct wealth, is actually really easy. And all you have to do is imagine a world where the analogy I use in the Two Sats video, which will come out very soon, is imagine you have a farm and it's worth $1 million. And for all intents and purposes, for all the necessities, energy production, you have diesel generator, you have some solar panels, you have enough land, you harvest crops, you have a sturdy stone house that's going to last you basically for the foreseeable future. You can provide for your family indefinitely for all intents and purposes if you maintain that farm, and it's worth $1 million. Now imagine you have $1 million in cash. Now, on one hand, you would say that the two things are worth the same amount because $1 million in cash can get you the $1 million farm, and the $1 million farm can get you $1 million in cash. Like, they are explicitly equal to each other in the trade network. Now, imagine there's some crazy alien technology, or there's a zombie apocalypse, there's some sort of total and complete disaster that obliterates all of society except your farm and your cash. So you still have the same things that you had, $1 million in cash or $1 million farm. Notice that if you still have the farm, you still have everything you need. You can still produce your food. You can still produce your energy. You still have a sturdy house. You can get and have anything and everything that you could have had before with the farm. If you have $1 million in cash, you have nothing. You have nothing at all. Why? Because the cash wasn't directly useful. All it was access to the farm in relation to the network of all the farms and houses and TVs and everything in the economic system of society. When the economic system vanished, the cash was access to nothing. So let's go back to the monetary premium. All of the monetary premium of that cash is gone. It's vanished, but the cash itself didn't change. Why did the value leave? The monetary premium is the value that the money, if scarce, is able to actually hold on to, that is a reflection of what society has available to purchase. If there is a single machine in the entire society that will accept, with a person that will accept money in exchange for that machine, then all of the supply of the money in that society, the entire monetary premium, is that one machine. If there are 10 machines, suddenly the purchasing power of all of that money increases tenfold, because the monetary premium now consists of a larger network of goods. 10 machines as opposed to one. That is deflation. Natural deflation, mind you, not debt deflation, not credit crisis deflation, not recession or depression deflation. These are entirely different things. It is also deflation if you set half of the money supply on fire. There are three ways that price deflation can come about in the market. It is growth in the market, and therefore all of the monetary units get more valuable because the society, the network they are a part of, just has more machines, has more stuff for sale. Or because there is money in circulation that is debt, and the debt has collapsed, and therefore that has shrank the money supply. Or you literally delete the money. This would be the example of Bitcoiners losing their keys to, 10,000 Bitcoin, and now there are just 10,000 fewer Bitcoin in the market. And understand, the consequences of these things are all very different. And what Keynesians idiotically point to is they look at the horrible consequences of their system, of the debt deflation, the one where a whole bunch of people take on credit and then cannot pay back that credit, and therefore that money is literally deleted. Everybody goes bankrupt, and that money is deleted from society. They rightly point out the disasters, which is purely a fiat mechanism. That is a total, debt is essentially fiat put on top of, even if it's under a gold standard. Debt is essentially, if you expand the money supply through debt, you issue debt out of thin air that people cannot afford, and then that debt is defaulted on. Well, that essentially deletes the money supply, and it causes a collapse when we are talking about credit. So a problem that is explicitly and only a problem of a fiat economy is absolutely correct, that type of deflation is terrible for the economy. But what's funny is neither the natural growth deflation, the natural growth version of deflation, where money just gets more valuable because society is wealthier, nor the I just deleted my money type of deflation is the same at all. Neither one of those have negative consequences for society at large. Deleting your own keys simply has the consequence of you losing access to resources that you are owed from society because you lost your proof of work. You lost your, I did favors for other people in the past, and I would like those favors redeemed from society. That's what money represents when it has been earned. So I want you to hold that in your mind, because we're going to come back to that in just a second. Now let's wrap it back around to where we started with this, is that the monetary premium, the value that money has as a money, which when it comes to Bitcoin, all of it is monetary premium. That value is the value of everyone and everything in society. People are willing to trade for it. It is the network of goods and services that are available, that I am willing to trade, that you are willing to give up. I am willing to give up my VR headset. I am willing to give up my car for Bitcoin. I am willing to sell anything and everything that I have for Bitcoin. Therefore, the value of those things are reflected in the value of Bitcoin. I am willing to give up my work. I am willing to give up my hours of trying to learn and understand things and talking to myself and my computer in a microphone in the hopes that this is useful to somebody else. I am willing to take that risk in order to try to get this concept into somebody else's head, because I believe it to be immensely valuable to understand these concepts, and I am willing to do that for more Bitcoin. That is what I do it for, to earn Bitcoin from other people who find it worth their while. All of that is in the monetary premium of Bitcoin, along with what everyone else is willing to trade in order to get more Bitcoin within the network of Bitcoin, within the network, the economic network of Bitcoiners, so to speak. Okay, so the next thing to understand is, what exactly is the money? Now that we understand what the value of the monetary premium is, it's a reflection of the value of the network, really a reflection of the value of the society that is accepting Bitcoin. Now it's important to understand what money is. And I've used the example a number of times in the past, but I still think it just works, is the idea of a sandwich maker who makes sandwiches, and earns $1 on every sandwich that he makes. And he makes sandwiches and he feeds other people. And, you know, whatever the context is, right? He spends $4 in goods and services, or goods and materials in order to make a sandwich, and he sells the sandwich for $5. But whatever it is, he earns $1 per sandwich. And then over a long span of time, he earns $1 million doing this, not actually consuming any sandwiches of his own. He does not consume. He consumes at bare minimum, and he simply saves all of those resources, all of those monetary units, in order to have them later. So we think about what has actually occurred at this point for him to have $1 million. When it comes to the resources, if money is not direct value, you're not going to eat it, you're not going to live in it, you don't do anything with it, it's just access to resources, well, then he has received nothing yet. In fact, if society blows up tomorrow, he'll have done all of that work for nothing. He will never get that value back. So what he has done is he has fed 1 million people, and he has explicitly asked for nothing in return. So what is the money in this regard? The money is a record-keeping system. It is a way for him to prove incrementally, piece by piece, and then even in aggregate after the fact, he can prove all of the value he has ever produced for other people. And that might be in one go, he has achieved $1 million worth of value for somebody in some way. Or, like I said in the example, he produced 1 million different sandwiches and got $1 every single time. But in some form or fashion, he has created and traded $1 million worth of value into the economic system for everyone else in society, and he has redeemed none of it. What those tokens are, what those monetary units represent, is proof of favors rendered to other people that can be redeemed back from society. So go back to the Dawkins quote of, it is a token of reciprocal altruism, of the I scratch my back, you scratch yours. Money is a proof of favors owed to the person who has already provided favors into the society. Unless, of course, someone can just arbitrarily print them out of thin air, then whoever has that power can just infinitely extract favors from the society, from anybody and everyone within the economic system, can just take all the houses, can just take all the cars, can use up all the fuel, and never actually put anything into the economic system. Literally never give anything back. They are just a destroyer of resources, a consumer of the world and of value that other people create. And if that is a political privilege, if that is something that some people can just do arbitrarily because they are of the proper authority, well, then that's just slavery. That's all that is. It's just slavery with a monetary fraud instead of slavery with whips and chains. But it's the same thing. You don't own the fruits of your labor. It's just, it can simply be taken from you at the whim of whoever gets to use the money printer. Money is a record-keeping system of society that explicitly needs to be as scarce as possible in order to hold and protect the value of all of the goods and services in society, to be a reflection of the value of society itself. Fiat money and printing money arbitrarily is simply a form of fraud on the record-keeping system, a way to counterfeit entries in that record-keeping system and to redeem favors that you never gave anybody. It's just a lie. It's just a lie. So what does this all have to do with the idea of waste, of wasting resources? Well, I think these are foundational things. These are fundamental truths to carry with us to really understand the argument as to why fiat money leads to an ungodly amount of waste necessarily. And we'll get into it in just a second. This episode is brought to you by Swan Bitcoin. You can go to swanbitcoin.com/guy, which is my link. And I want everyone who listens to this, if you're thinking about going to some other exchange, to Coinbase, to Binance, to whatever it is, please stay away from the trading platforms. I promise you, you will go there and you will learn the exact wrong thing about what makes Bitcoin valuable and why you should be here and why it is so important to have an allocation to Bitcoin. They will teach you to trade. They will push every stupid token into your lap and try to get you to buy every airdrop and every nonsense thing under the sun because they make money off of those fees. They want you looking at charts. That is not what this is about. And you will learn that very quickly at Swan Bitcoin. And they will do everything they can for you to understand the long-term approach and why this is valuable. This is not a frivolous toy that you toss around. This is something that you hold for the long term. And they have the easiest way to set up a long-term savings plan to just automatically purchase. If you save money, just save it in something that somebody else can't print. That's all you need to do. Save it in the best, most secure, most scarce money that is available. That is Bitcoin. And you will have ample resources to learn anything that you want to learn about Bitcoin over at Swan Bitcoin. They have a resources page and a Bitcoin canon page, which is just phenomenal. It is a collection of so many different works from so many different people. And they also have every other thing that you could think of. If you, when you were looking for financial services, you want to get it in your retirement, you want to set up an IRA in just a couple of minutes, you want to get your business connected to it, you want someone to be there basically all the time to answer questions whenever you feel uncomfortable, you can check out Swan Private. Swan is built for getting on a Bitcoin standard from start to finish. Whether you are a noob or you have millions and millions of dollars and you want a strong foundation and allocation, go to swanbitcoin.com/guy. The link is right in my show notes and check them out. All right. So if the monetary premium is the value of the society, if the money itself is a record-keeping system for favors owed, that have favors that have already been given, and favors owed to those who have participated, who have added into the economic system, then it means that the act of saving is literally the act of producing for society, producing a net surplus for society. Going into debt is literally the act of a net destruction of resources. It is explicitly destroying value and resources without putting them back. Think about that. Just think about that. That's what debt means. If I go into debt and eat a million sandwiches, it literally means I've taken a million sandwiches out and I haven't given it back yet. Think about that in the context of a society that just gets progressively more and more in debt. That's like, look at our debt levels. To the people who say the debt doesn't matter, it literally means we are destroying things and not putting it back. Of course it matters. You cannot just keep doing that inevitably, because eventually you run out of stuff. And if you have a global monetary reserve, then eventually, after you run out of your stuff, you just start extracting stuff from the rest of the world while they continue to just basically voluntarily decide to be your slave. But the second they stop, or the second they run out of resources, the gig is up. You cannot maintain any of it. We are just destroying resources endlessly without putting them back. It is the very definition of unsustainable. The only reason it has gone on for as long as it has when it comes to the dollar is simply because we have a global network. Like 80% of the trade on planet Earth is done in dollars. So we get to extract wealth from everybody. It's just like a giant funnel. All the capital, all the goods, all the products and services, they all just get sucked to the United States. But here's the kicker. Here's what's crazy about this, is because everybody else is working for our money, it actually becomes cheaper. It actually disincentivizes the very structure of wealth creation inside the country, because it artificially increases the price of capital inside the United States than it does outside the United States, which is why we don't manufacture anything anymore. It's not because a modern economy stops manufacturing things and becomes a service economy. That's absolute nonsense. That would be like saying that after you got wealthy, you just started working for other people instead of producing your own food and your own... Like, that's not sovereignty. That's not independence. You're more dependent than you were. That's a form of structural poverty with the appearance of consumptive wealth. We get to consume a whole lot, but we are entirely dependent upon the participation of the people who are actually producing those things. The second they stop producing for our favor tokens, which are all being counterfeited, we lose it all. And we have nothing to back it up with, because we have exported our entire economic base to them so that we could just rob them of all of their resources. And of course, it also creates an entitled, wasteful, arrogant, and self-hating generations of a population. Nobody knows what anything means anymore. Nobody knows why we do anything. It all just feels pointless. We're disconnected from all of it. We have no idea why people are just kind of rich arbitrarily. It doesn't feel like we're aligned with anything. We're not connected to the world around us. We're not connected to our food. We're not connected to each other. We're just kind of like walking around and arbitrarily working where we're being requested to produce stuff so that we can just consume. And all of the things we consume just to distract us from the fact that it all feels meaningless. So how and why does that happen exactly? Again, it's fundamental to the ideas we've already discussed. What money is, what a monetary premium is, and importantly, when we understand what the idea of a monetary premium is, what does it mean to expect the value of money to go up? Think about this. Go back to the idea of deflation under sound money. To value the money across time as something that will become more valuable in the future is to value the growth and prosperity of society. They are one in the same. It may not be explicit. It may not be that you consciously realize that that's what you were doing, but that's what is being aligned through the mechanism of the money. To hold on to Bitcoin right now, knowing that it's going to be worth, you know, twice as much, five times as much, 10 times as much in the future, is to explicitly hold on to the money in anticipation of the prosperity society is going to produce in the future. That is us literally looking into the future and seeing something more valuable, a larger, more productive, more prosperous network. And think about it. What does it encourage us to do? Again, go back to the idea of money as a record-keeping system. If the money encourages us to save because we value the future of society as worth more than today, it is incentivizing us aggressively to preserve resources for that future. It is a self-fulfilling prophecy. By enabling us to ride the wave of society itself, to benefit from the growth of society, it encourages the very behavior that leads to the growth of that society, to the increase, to the sustainable increase of productive capital, goods, and services available in the market. It literally pays a collective interest rate to run a surplus through the purchasing power of the money itself. And how does this enable us to relate? How does this change the relationship between each other, between you and me? Well, now it's not a dog-eat-dog world anymore. Now it's suddenly clear that if you succeed, I get wealthier too. If I succeed, you get wealthier. It literally switches to a you scratch my back, I scratch yours. Our desire to see a prosperous future is now actually cooperative instead of competitive. Now, this doesn't mean people don't compete, but fundamentally, we are all aligned toward the same goal. This is why there is so much cohesion in the Bitcoin economy, despite all the stupid things that people will argue about, whether or not you use a ceramic pan or iron. Everything that you do to make the Bitcoin world better benefits me, and vice versa. This is exactly why I talk about the idea of small countries coming together on a Bitcoin standard that have no other reason to align, but as they build stuff in their own independent circles, in their, like, you know, El Salvador builds out their infrastructure or builds out open source code, and then, you know, the Congo or Nigeria or something gets to then use that software or whatever, even if they don't have a direct alignment, even if they don't end up using that common monetary language to directly trade with each other, which they now can without the approval of the IMF or without having to worry about whether or not they're going to get a loan from the United States, they can directly trade. They can have a direct trade network with each other without having to go through the European or Western approval process that they are essentially trapped in now because they speak the same monetary language. Now, but they may still never do that. They still may have no direct reason to trade. But if El Salvador doubles in their economic output and they actually grow their economy and Nigeria doubles their economic output because they have a more sound money, both of these separately become successful. Each one of their capital growth increases the value of the monetary network. So Nigeria's savings and economy explode in value because of El Salvador's, and vice versa. Their trade networks add to each other rather than fight each other for the resources that are available. And that is including whether or not they even trade directly with each other. Because people will trade with them that trade with each other that end up connecting Nigeria and El Salvador to the same economic network. And if we want to understand why this is so simple, we go back to the one machine versus 10 machine monetary network. If El Salvador has one machine and Nigeria has one machine, then we have a monetary network where you can buy two machines. and that is the entire monetary premium of whatever that money is. If El Salvador then builds 9 machines and Nigeria builds 9 machines, well, then the monetary network is worth 20 machines. And understand, El Salvador only built 9 machines, but the purchasing power of the network increased by 18. And when someone is saving money, and they are seeing that they can either use up those machines for some purpose, or they can hold on to the money and see the money increase in purchasing power by even more machines, well, then they are only going to actually use up those resources if they expect to outpace the general growth of that money, or, and this is a very important or, they are going to produce something themselves that whether or not they make the return, believe is valuable enough to simply lose the money in order to have the thing in society. This is where art comes from. This is where creation comes from. This is where the people who simply want to build things because they want to see those things succeed or exist in the world because they believe they can, and they don't even care whether or not they profit from it. And I see this constantly in Bitcoin. The people who have already made a killing off of Bitcoin in the past, who've made huge returns, will turn around and spend that money on something, will actually invest that money into something that they have no idea if they're going to make a return off of. Peridrive, and not to use myself as an example, like I'm some sort of saint, like I don't, that's not true at all. I simply want Peridrive to exist because I am so, I told you, for anybody who's listened to this show, that I just got furious. I'm so fed up with file sharing between devices being such an unbelievable nightmare. Always requiring some sort of setup, always being unreliable, being unintuitive, and requiring me to go through some cloud service or host with Apple or Google or Amazon, which I am so sick of having to depend on, and I'm so sick of seeing them or having them see everything that I do and being the center of my life. And if they ever go down, it's just all gone. I guess I'll just have my services tomorrow sometime. I certainly hope I make my Bitcoin back off of Peridrive, but I don't know. And I went into it thinking I just wanted to solve this problem because I am so sick of not having this problem solved. And I think we can solve it. I think it is worth building it whether or not I make my money back. And even better, I know that if it is successful, if it is as valuable to everyone else or to anyone else as much as it is valuable to me, I will make the economic network more valuable, and the Bitcoin that I have left will be worth more because I will have added to the monetary premium. And I think this is also why when we had the gold standard and the printing press and so much aligned and we ended up with a renaissance, I think it's specifically because you create enough wealth that people create art for the sake of art, not for the sake of making a return. Art becomes not about just trying to find something that will appeal to the lowest common denominator, but to build something or to make something in the world that you find meaningful, that you find so valuable and so important to you as a creator, that you simply will do whatever it takes. You will spend the money, you will take the time in order to see it exist in the world. And this is also why I think during those points in history, you had an explosion of the patron model. Because for the people who couldn't explicitly create but could see a vision, they could go and find someone who could see the same vision, who could understand the vision as they saw it, and could actually bring it into the world, could actually make it happen. So that's a very important or, in my opinion, is that you would the two things that are worth investing in a society where money grows slowly over time, money grows in value with the growth of society, is either a productive or capital endeavor that you think will outpace the growth of society. Therefore, if you can only do the average of what society does by doing nothing, then you simply won't waste the resources. There's no reason for you to use up resources to slow down society if you're below average. So only the things that we engage in should be at least what we think is going to be above the average growth rate. And by increasing that, it means that only the best ideas, all of the funding and all of the capital are left for the absolute best ideas out there who have the highest expected return and the most immediate and strongest elements of demand or need. It raises the bar for what is worth doing because it properly recognizes the cost of wasting those resources on something that is of no use to anybody. So that's the first thing. And then the second thing is when you simply use up the capital to produce something, that whether or not it makes a return does not matter, because you individually find it to be so valuable, so meaningful, that you would rather see it exist simply because it is worth using your life in order to see that achieved. That you simply don't want to have lived a life on this world without having left that mark on it. That is the incentive structure that sound money gives us. So what happens when you degrade the money? What happens when you print it arbitrarily? What happens if it is a bad money? Well, what's funny is it actually does exactly what they say it does. It encourages spending. It encourages people to just throw it wherever the hell they can throw it, to use up as many resources as they can. In fact, it encourages them to go into debt to use up resources faster and faster. And the more and more that money loses value over time, the more people look into the future and they see its destruction. They see its loss of monetary premium. And they do everything they can to get rid of it as fast as possible, to redeem as many favors as possible and put as few favors and as little capital and as little goods into the economic system as they possibly can. And in fact, if they can just leverage massively, if they can just take out millions of dollars worth of favors and watch their what they owe back to society get diminished, watch what they need to repay slowly vanish so that they don't ever actually have to do anything, the better. This is such a staggeringly massive force to waste resources on anything and everything that people can come up with, regardless of what it's worth, regardless of what it means, and for any possible use they can come up with. It is a competition to consume stuff as fast as we can, because otherwise someone else is going to consume it first. And the more this accelerates to greater debt and greater inflation, the worse the competition against each other becomes. Rather than being a cooperative system where you succeed at my indirect benefit, instead, your success in consuming stuff is you trying to get the dwindling resources before I can. This is exactly what you see in housing. People buying up houses as fast as they can, with as much leverage as they can, with as much low debt, low interest debt as they can, so that they can own everything, because they know in 5 years it's going to be that much harder to get a hold of a house. We're in competition. If you didn't get a house 10 years ago when interest rates were incredibly low and it was easy to get a loan, and now you're trying to buy a house, you're screwed. You can't get half the house that you could, and your interest rate is twice as high. It literally and directly encourages us to do the opposite of preserve resources. And it turns a cooperative network into a competitive one. One where one person's success is another person's failure, is another person's loss. My ability to get a house cheaply with debt today at a low price is someone else's inability to ever afford a house in 5 to 10 years. A whole generation will grow up renting everything, and they will own nothing, because it simply too f***ing expensive. And everybody knows it's just going to be more expensive next year. Now here's something that's really funny about this, and why counterintuitively, the money must be the most valuable thing in society. It must be the highest demand, the most desirable thing to hold on to in all of society in order for incentives to actually line up for that society to be sustainable and to be prosperous. And when you realize that the future expected value of the money is the future expected value of the society itself, and we understand money as a record-keeping system to redeem resources in the future, then our direct desire to hold on to that record-keeping system to redeem resources is the very thing that pushes us, incentivizes us so unbelievably strongly to preserve resources and produce resources as fast and as strongly as we can. It's the flip side of the same coin. If we desire to hold the money as the most valuable good in society, it means we are being directly encouraged to produce every other good in society and to waste and use up as little resources as we possibly can in order to make sure we own a piece of the prosperous future. If we've consumed everything that we can consume and we have nothing left to redeem from society, then we don't get to participate in that future. And what happens when the money is degraded? When we see that in the future it will buy us less? It directly encourages us to waste and use up every possible thing we can get our hands on today, as fast as we possibly can, at any and everyone else's expense. Because the last thing I want is to own a piece of our society's future, because all it's going to do is bleed. Because we are going to be able to afford less. We are going to get less. We are going to rent more, unless I can get my piece of it today. And whether or not I can pay it back is arbitrary, as long as I can own it. Because then its price will go up as everyone else can increasingly not afford it. And my debt, what I owe back to society, will simply be absolved. My debt to society will be partially paid a little bit more every single year without me having to do anything at all, simply because I took ownership of the goods that we already had while I watched the society diminish in value. So they say that printing money encourages spending and encourages people to go into debt, and they're exactly right. And that's exactly how they doom society. That is literally how they destroy it, block by block, until there is nothing left, and we all live in poverty, and we all hate each other, and we are all doing meaningless, empty tasks in the collective process of propping up a monetary fraud, a political hierarchy of slavery, and running a system, a giant machine, that is cannibalizing the very society we are part of. And it is explicitly done by the simple act of making money something not valuable to hold on to. And all you have to do to fix it is make money more valuable than everything else again. And suddenly all the incentives will realign. And what was a race to waste everything and to use up or rush to own everything that we possibly can as fast as we can becomes a competition to produce and preserve as much value for society as possible. The reason it is critical for money to go up in value over time is because that is the very thing that aligns incentives for us to behave in a way that will make society more valuable in the future. Our desire for money's increasing purchasing power is literally the manifestation of our desire to see a better future. And unsurprisingly, a money that degrades over time destroys the future of society, and a money that grows over time makes a healthy, prosperous, more independent, and more foundationally sustainable, preserving society. So if you ever look around at the world and you see waste, you see constant consumerism, you see mindless consumption, you see destruction of resources, of value, of productivity, without any concern whatsoever as to the long-term consequences or to what it means in the future. You see a bunch of giant corporations with just hundreds of billions of dollars and cheap financing, just buying up everything. You constantly drive around and you see degrading, rotten inner cities with an explosion of rental properties and cookie-cutter houses being built up in quick succession that aren't even going to last the 30 years of their financing program before they will essentially need to be rebuilt, and all of that infrastructure will need to be repaired with another round of financing. When you see mountains of trash floating around in the oceans, when you see things being cheaply and arbitrarily replaced rather than maintained, thrown away, that could be repaired, and then you see the quality of those products and services and goods degrade, specifically in line with the expectation that people are just going to throw them away anyway, it will never be fixed unless you fix the money. If people don't even know and can't even value, there is no form to manifest the value and the hope for the future of that society. They will just keep wasting things. They will just replace stuff, not knowing what it actually costs. They will just endlessly destroy resources and try to consume and own as much as they can today, hoping that they don't have to pay back that actual value into society. They will consume as much as they can, as fast as they can, with no regard for the future. And it will be no coincidence at all that it feels like we are all on our own, that everything is meaningless, that we are driving toward a cliff and there's no way to get away from it, and that something is fundamentally broken with society. Because the simple fact of the matter is there is. But like I always say, we can actually fix it. I hope this helped to paint the picture that I was trying to paint in your mind. And I hope you enjoyed this episode. Thank you to Swan Bitcoin for being a great place to buy Bitcoin and not deal with the noise of crypto bullshit, and to CoinKite and the Cold Card Hardware Wallet for keeping my Bitcoin safe. And to the Audionauts for always supporting me, thank you, I love you all. I am Guy Swan, and until next time, everybody, take it easy, guys. By replacing fear of the unknown with curiosity, we open ourselves up to an infinite stream of possibility. We can let fear rule our lives, or we can become childlike with curiosity, pushing our boundaries, leaping out of our comfort zones, and accepting what life puts before us. Alan Watts.